Good afternoon and welcome to House Labor and Commerce for Wednesday, March 16th? No, today's Friday.
It's the 16th.
Today's Wednesday?
Friday the 16th.
Start again.
Sorry.
Welcome to House Labor and Commerce. It's 3:25 p.m. on Friday, March 16th. Members present are Representative Sullivan Leonard, Representative Stutes, Representative Josephson, and myself, Chair Keto. Representatives Birch and Knopp and Wool are excused. We do have a quorum to conduct business. We only have a short agenda, hopefully, today. We do have Susie Edwardson as our recording secretary, Max Stanley as our LIO moderator. Please remember to turn your cell phones off and take any calls outside in the hallway if you must. We have House Bill 329, Real Estate Appraisal Management Companies, in our first hearing. House Bill 374, On Bill Financing of Energy Improvements, first hearing. And we are continuing to work on Senate Bill 4, which was previously announced for this meeting. We hope to have committee substitutes ready by Monday for that meeting. So with that, we will bring House Bill 329 before us, Real Estate Appraisal Management Companies. And if we can have Mr. Atkinson come forward and introduce us to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Tom Atkinson. I'm staff to Representative Josephson. One of the causes of the nationwide recession that began in 2008 were bad mortgages bundled together into stocks. And one of the things that was bad about the mortgages were that there were misappraisals or appraisals that were wrong. This came about partly, it's reported, by lending institutions, mortgage originators and bankers, kind of leaning on appraisers and saying, go look at the Atkinson property. We think it's probably worth $250,000. And the appraiser responding, are you crazy? Atkinson's property isn't worth $100,000. And the lender then saying, okay, well, we'll find someone else to appraise it. We probably won't need your services in the future. So you ended up with some appraisals that were way above the actual market value. So then Congress responded to the recession with, in part, with the Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Act. And Dodd-Frank inserted another layer into the mortgaging, the mortgage process, which was designed, this other layer, to create an arm's length mortgage so that the lender was no longer directly hiring the appraiser. The lender instead used an appraisal management company to hire the appraiser. And the federal legislation, Dodd-Frank, then set up a appraisal subcommittee, which promulgated regulations, federal regulations, and it gave all the states a certain amount of time to set up our own regulations for appraisal management companies. We don't have to, it's not required, but if we don't, appraisal management companies can't conduct 100% of the business they're currently conducting in our state. They wouldn't be able to, if we don't regulate appraisal management companies, they wouldn't be able to handle federally related transactions. Estimates are that federally related transactions comprise about 10% of the market. But there's money in it, and so the appraisal management companies want us to regulate them, and the appraisers actually want us to regulate appraisal management companies also, so that the appraisal management companies can continue to order appraisals and deliver them to the lending institutions for 100% of the market. This actually helps Joe and Jane Alaskan too, because getting a mortgage, and I've done it a few times, it's incredibly complex unless you are in the industry, and it happens in a hurry, so it can be quite befuddling for the consumer, the buyer or the seller. Typically, a lending institution doesn't hold your mortgage for the full 30 or 15 years. They turn around and sell it to an underwriter. And they don't the mortgage originator doesn't necessarily know whether it's a federally related transaction or not. So if you wanted to buy or sell a house, and I'm sorry, I failed to point out that this relates only to residential property transactions, not commercial. If you wanted to buy or sell a house, you wouldn't know when you went to get a loan whether it was a federally related transaction or not. So if Alaska doesn't regulate appraisal management companies, it could be a big impediment and a big headache for just regular people trying to buy or sell houses. So that's why Representative Josephson is bringing this forward to you. There is also a Senate counterpart bill. There is a federal deadline of August 10th of this year. However, the Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development has asked the Federal Appraisal Subcommittee to give us another year. They are likely to do that, but that appraisal subcommittee doesn't meet until May, so we don't know for sure whether they're going to grant that. Chances are they will.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Atkinson. Any questions? I do have one. So I guess just for clarification, what we are doing with the appraisal management companies, they are not currently regulated by the state of Alaska. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct.
Okay. And so in this bill, we are adding a provision for appraisal management companies underneath the Real Estate Commission. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct. The federal regulations promulgated by the appraisal subcommittee pursuant to Dodd-Frank Financial Reform Act stipulate that when a state regulates appraisal management companies, they do it through their Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers.
Okay, so not the Real Estate Commission, the Board of Real Estate Appraisers. I think we have two separate organizations there. Is that correct?
Okay. Well, I'm not sure whether we have a commission, but I'm sure we have a Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers because I've spoken with the chairman of that board on numerous occasions.
Right, we've had both of the sunsets actually come before our committee. Question from Representative Stutes.
I see. I must have thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. I must have been at another meeting. Is this the second time?
First.
Oh, this is the first time because I see the appraisers board chair's answers to the sponsor's question. Please provide a list of AMCs currently operating in Alaska and indicate which ones are homegrown. And there's no current list. This has been said a lot of times, and maybe I'm just not familiar enough with this bill, but it seems to me that it's trying to solve a problem that doesn't really exist. I guess I'm not getting the crux of this from what you're saying. I just don't see, I mean, we're putting in another layer. I guess I'm at a loss as to what the benefit of this is, even after listening to your explanation. I still don't see what the benefit of this is. I'm sorry. So maybe you can help me here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, Representative Stutes. Maybe I can. Congress, in the wake of the 2008 financial meltdown, thought that it was a good idea to insert this additional layer to which you allude so that the lending institution, the mortgage originator, the people you go see to get a loan for buying a house, don't contact the appraiser directly. They use a middleman or a woman to contact the appraiser, and then the idea being that there can be no collusion between the lender and the appraiser.
Atkinson, if I might add on to that. So basically what we are doing is following up from a situation pretty much from 10 years ago, and Dodd-Frank was kind of the result of what happened with the subprime mortgage market. And one of the concerns that was expressed was that appraisers were working in collusion with either real estate agents or mortgage companies or banks in order to acknowledge real estate values that might not have been accurate because there was not a arm's length relationship between the appraisers and the others in the real estate transfer, the real estate sale organization or scheme, that there had been concern that those things happen without oversight. And by doing this, my understanding is we're putting the structure in place, and even though we don't have, or if we, I think one of the answers to the questions was that there aren't many real estate management right. companies in Alaska, but that when we do start with this law, they will be required to work through an appraisal management company instead of directly with individual appraisers. Is that fair, Mr. Atkinson?
Well, and I, through the chair, follow up, if I might. Thank you. I kind of got all that, and I'm still, let me ask, if I might ask another question of you. How many other states have implemented this? Any idea?
Through the chair, Representative Suits, it's my understanding that 46 other states have. There's we and two other states in the District of Columbia have yet to pass law.
Thank you.
Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would you, through the chair, would you please go over the fiscal note with me? I'm a little bit concerned with the fact that we're adding a position that will be specifically towards the processing of this particular legislation, and then with the collection of the funds, then that will go to the federal government. So can you, am I getting that correct in the fiscal note? Through the analysis?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, the department will need to write regulations. And so there's some cost for that. But we've also, the legislature over the years has told all the departments to try to pay for their own programs, and DCCED is particularly good at that. So they have some board support staff that they would pay for through assessing fees on appraisal management companies. But then also the federal government requires that the states that do regulate appraisal management companies give some of the registration fees to the appraisal subcommittee to pay for the appraisal subcommittee's work.
Mm-hmm. Okay, follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Follow up.
Okay, I still have a bit of concern on that. And then also, can you relay any examples with regard to what Alaska has gone through? Yeah, I mean, you certainly gave a description about the recession and some of the challenges that we're seeing nationally, but in Alaska with regard to inflated real estate prices between the appraisal and the real estate agents, because I certainly hadn't heard of any, and I've worked pretty closely in my area with private appraisers and not had any issues. So if there's something that's outstanding, I'd like to hear about it.
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, no, I cannot relate any examples. However, okay. The chairman of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers for Alaska, Dave Derry, is online, mm-hmm. and he might be able to. My own impression from the appraisers I've spoken to is that they're all fine, upstanding business people, and that they're not prone to shenanigans, but they do want the state to regulate appraisal management companies so that there aren't hiccups in their business.
So just one more follow-up, please. So for a private appraisal business, what would they then have to pay annually then to be up to speed on this particular legislation?
Through the chair, is the question for an appraiser or for an appraisal management company? What would an appraisal management company? Appraisers currently, and Mr. Derry can, we can ask him this question too, but in a recent conversation with him, he indicated that it costs an appraiser about $1,100 every 2 years mm-hmm. to remain certified with the state. An appraisal management company, it depends upon how much the state requires in a surety bond, but there's the certification fees for the controlling person for an appraisal management company. In our current draft of Representative Josephson's bill, it would probably cost an appraisal management company about $2,400 a year, $2,000 to $2,400 a year is the estimate, to be certified so they have a controlling person who would be a single point of contact for the board.
Okay, and then, sorry, Mr. Chairman, and then would this then mandate that a private appraisal business would have to then be under an appraisal company, I guess?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, no. Curiously, it's not the ultimate responsibility for certifying that the appraisal is skookum is the lender. The lender has to certify that the appraisal is above board. It's a good appraisal, that it meets with the market. And they can skip the appraisal management company and use appraisers now. And Mr. Derry can tell you of at least three Alaska lending institutions that currently do that, that don't use appraisal management companies.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Stutz.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, through the chair. So I see on this letter dated February 12th, 2019, from Wells Fargo, and it says, if a state does not set up a compliant regulatory system for AMCs by August of 2018, then home loan lenders cannot use AMCs for federally related transactions. And I guess my response to that is, so? So tell me, so they can't use them, so they get another appraiser. Big deal. I mean, I don't understand. I guess I'm still, even though this is apparently a federally mandated, this AMC process that this bill addresses is in response to a federal mandate. Am I reading that correctly in this letter?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, the mandate from the federal government is that if we want to regulate appraisal management companies in this state, we have to do it by a certain date, and it has to, and our regulation of them has to include certain items. But we are not required, to regulate appraisal management companies. And if we don't, life will still go on. People will still be able to get mortgages and buy and sell residential properties. It might be more difficult. And the appraisal management companies won't make money off of certain transactions.
Follow-up.
No follow-up.
Thank you. Through the chair. I guess that's my point. This is creating a niche, in other words, for another small business. That's what this sounds like to me. At the expense of a homeowner or a individual looking for some type of home loan, mortgage, which would require an appraisal. The appraiser's going to make the same amount of money. He's just going to jack up his price because now he has to belong to this organization. If I'm getting this correctly, he's going to jack up his price, which is going to create increased cost to the consumer so he can pay to belong to this organization that we're not mandated to have, according to what you just said. Do I have that right?
Through the chair, Representative Stutz, you have it right that we are not mandated by the federal government to regulate appraisal management companies. As far as the cost of the consumer, who pays additional cost, that there's many different flavors of that. Currently in Alaska, where we're not regulating appraisal management companies, sometimes the lender eats the additional cost. Somebody has to pay the appraisal management company for what they do. Many times the appraisal management company takes it out of the appraiser's hide, so the appraiser makes less money. Sometimes they split the cost, and the buyer and the seller may have to pay the appraisal management company fee. Sometimes the lending institution pays it. We would not mandate any particular sharing of costs. They would do it the way they do it now.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging me. This will be my last follow up. You said there's 48 other states, the current, possibly.
46.
Okay, 46. Let's just say 40. Do you have any idea what the fees are charged by any of those AMCs in any other state?
Through the chair, Representative Stutes, I don't. Mr. Derry probably does. He's been in touch with the Appraisal Institute, which is the appraiser's national professional body, and they keep nationwide statistics.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions for Mr. Atkinson? Representative Josephson.
Thank you, through the chair. Mr. Atkinson, I mean, part of the thing is, though, that if we don't regulate AMCs, then we're not fully gaining the benefit of the sort of effort to insulate appraisals from sort of lender-appraiser collusion. Isn't that right? Or at least the theory of Dodd-Frank.
Through the chair, yes. Representative Josephson, that's correct. That's what the Dodd-Frank legislation was getting at, was consumer protection.
Thank you. Representative Sullivan Leonard.
Mr. Chairman, I thought I'd ask that question to see if any of those type of situations had happened here in Alaska, and accordingly, there was nothing that your staff could recollect. So, Mr. Josephson, do you know of anything? I mean, because I'm thinking of Alaska specific and not nationally.
Through the chair, I don't, but I do think that the other issue is with federally related transactions and creating problems for Alaskan appraisers where we don't regulate AMCs. And it sounds like that's an issue as well.
Mr. Chairman, if I might. Federally related transactions is a quagmire. You'd think, Veterans Administration, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, those are federally related transactions. Not necessarily so. It's a complex environment, whether something's a federally related transaction or not. Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, my gut tells me that's not going to be a federally related transaction, but I couldn't state that with any certainty. There is posted on BASIS a definition of a federally related transaction. I challenge you to understand it.
Thank you. Let's go ahead and get to Mr. Derry. So we've got him available. We'll go ahead and bring him forward, and maybe he can answer some of the questions as well. Dave Derry. Mr. Derry, can you place your name in?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is David Derry. I'm serving as the chair of the Board of Certified Real Estate Appraisers. And I would just make a couple of statements here initially, and then I'm certainly available for comments. I guess number one, the board supports the AMC legislation and AMC oversight. And although we're not really looking for more work, we think it's an important function that should happen within the state of Alaska. And we think enabling AMC operations in Alaska just broadens the available mortgage market for the Alaska public. As Mr. Atkinson has described, some lenders do use AMCs, some don't. Probably the easiest thing to try to describe what an AMC is they're really an entity that functions to assist a lender in finding appraisers and securing appraisals in the process of getting a mortgage transaction. And this is for people that are looking for mortgages for their principal residence. So if you imagine a lender, for example, Rocket Mortgage, that seems to be doing a lot of advertising now, excuse me, headquartered in the lower 48. And I might just add here as a side comment that there are no Alaska-based AMCs, which is probably not surprising because we just don't have that much business for them. But an entity like Rocket Mortgage, for example, that may be located somewhere in the lower 48, people are applying online. So somebody applies for a loan in Fairbanks, somebody applies for a loan in Anchorage, and that lender or that entity that might be making the loan, you know, they don't know who to call for an appraiser. They don't know they probably need a map to find Fairbanks. So using the AMC is an expeditious, easy way for them to go through this process of getting an appraisal, and it also then provides a basis for complying with the requirements under Dodd-Frank that there be a separation between the entity making the loan or the loan officer and the appraiser. So one of the impetus for passing AMC legislation and incorporating it in Dodd-Frank was to provide that separation so that there wasn't that influence between maybe the loan officer and the appraiser. I think those of us that are independent appraisers in Alaska are just that. We're independent, and I would probably say that the majority of us as appraisers have from time to time, if they've had any experience at all, in the past maybe did have somebody that tried to influence us. But, you know, I don't think that we've had any cases that anybody has really succumbed to that. And in answer to the question about as a, you know, fallout of the mortgage market collapse in lower 48, did we have any problems in Alaska? I'm not aware that we had any cases that actually came all the way back into processing by the board. And of course, I've been on the board for 4 years, but prior to that time, there may have been something. Anything that might have happened would have been confidential. But the AMC, just to continue on here regarding cost of the AMCs, there's really a separation here in the functions where the AMC regulation process would be separate from the appraisal oversight or appraiser oversight. Both of them would be regulated and oversight would be performed by our board of real estate appraisers, but we're not going to, there's no requirement that an appraiser be signed up or a member of an AMC. They're really going to be an independent contractor to that AMC. So the appraiser is going to pay his or her fees as an appraiser. The AMC is going to pay their fees for whatever that regulatory cost would be. And that would be determined once we develop regulations and see just, you know, what amount of time is involved in doing that. As Mr. Atkinson has said, prevailing fees for AMCs in the lower 48, my understanding, is anywhere from $2,000 to $2,400. You know, would that be the cost in Alaska? I don't know. Currently, appraisers, certified appraisers in Alaska, we pay $1,050. Plus we pay $80, a mandatory $80, to the Federal Appraisal Subcommittee to be registered with them. There also would be a fee that the appraisal management companies would have to pay to the Federal Appraisal Subcommittee, and that is $25 per appraiser that they would have on their appraiser panel. So the way the AMCs operate is they end up contracting with an appraiser, and that appraiser then would sign up with that AMC. And one of the criteria for regulating AMCs is that they must have either 15 appraisers signed up within a state or a total of 25 appraisers in two states. So that would be, you know, the basis that their fees that they would be charged for federal oversight would be assessed. And those fees, again, are going to be paid, you know, by the AMCs. They're going to be paid and currently are being paid by the appraisers. So it's our burden of being regulated. It's something we pay, and it's under the basis that it doesn't really impose a cost to the state of Alaska. And so we review what those fees are periodically and determine whether there's a sufficient amount of money to cover the cost of the board and our administrative help, and if so, they're adjusted up or down. Regarding cost to consumer, there really should be no real cost to a consumer as part of this AMC operation. We currently have some lenders that use AMCs. Wells Fargo uses an AMC. Alaska USA Federal Credit Union uses an AMC. We have some lenders in the state that don't. We have First National Bank Alaska and North Rim Bank. McKinley Bank and Fairbanks do not have AMCs. We have the executive senior loan officer for Mount McKinley Bank and Fairbanks that is actually on our board. And so, you know, the lenders themselves can set up within their banks the provisions to comply with Dodd-Frank and have that separation between the loan origination functions and the appraisal ordering and review functions, or other lenders opt to use the AMC process for whatever their reasons are. And frequently, I think it's, you know, lower 48 lenders that or entities that would, like I say, find this to be the easiest way to do that. And as I say, the AMCs would be totally independent of any appraiser operations.
Thank you, Mr. Derry. We do have a question from Representative Stutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Through the chair. So I heard you mention you're on the appraiser's board, and you've been on the board for 4 years. Is that correct?
Through the chair, yes, I have.
So based on an individual that I know that is getting his appraiser's license, I know that it's a pretty rigorous process, and it's quite time-consuming as well. You don't get it overnight. It takes quite a while to get your appraiser's license. So if being on that board, you discover that there is an appraiser that is in a collusion with a lender, wouldn't the board then take action against in relation to that appraiser?
Through the chair, Representative, that would be correct. The board would take action in the case of the AMC. If the appraisal was ordered by an AMC, we would take action against the AMC and the appraiser through the board. If it was simply the appraiser was in collusion and there was no AMC involved, then we would be essentially processing the appraiser. And I would certainly agree with you that it's an onerous process to go through for certification. And it's not something that we developed. This is essentially, it's requirements that have evolved over the years. And as many things, it's due to problems that developed nationally in the mortgage market. You know, we had some in Alaska, but that was a long time ago. And so our requirements for certification mirror those of essentially the other states. And there is a move to make it a little easier for appraisers to become certified residential appraisers. And we're going to be working on a regulatory change to accomplish that. But that's as a result of a change in federal regulations that just happened in early March of 2018.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
Follow up.
Thank you. So based on what I heard you just say, then you said if that were the case and there were collusion and you had there was an AMC involved, you would take action against the AMC as well as the appraiser, which leads me to believe that having this AMC does not preclude having that collusion based on what you just said?
Through the chair, well, it isn't going to guarantee that there's no collusion. I mean, that's not really the purpose of having this AMC legislation. It's more to allow us to go after the AMC. If we didn't have any AMC legislation and they came into Alaska to do an appraisal, to essentially order an appraisal and had collusion with an appraiser, we would have no oversight on them at all. We would be just essentially focusing on the appraiser, and the appraisal management company could be the ones that are actually applying the pressure and causing the problem.
Follow up. Mr. Chair, please. I don't think I'm going to go down that rabbit hole any further. But I guess my last comment would be, if you said down in the lower 48, somewhere between $2,000 and $2,400 would be the cost of this AMC, I cannot possibly believe that an AMC is going to eat those costs without passing them on to the consumer. It's a cost of doing business, and the bottom line usually is the consumer. So I just don't see any way around that.
Any other questions for Mr. Derry?
Well, through the chair, I think the thing to remember is that for ultimately the lender is the one that's originating the loan. The AMC is the entity that's actually processing the appraisal. So the competition there, not everyone is using AMCs, as I said. So from a competitive standpoint, somebody going to Wells Fargo, for example, for a mortgage, if they're going to charge more, Wells Fargo is going to charge more because they're using an AMC versus going to First National Bank Alaska to process their mortgage, which isn't using an AMC and charges less. They're going to have a competitive disadvantage, anyone using the AMC. And in terms of cost, most of these AMCs are fairly large entities. And as I said, none of them are based in Alaska. $2,400 is really not that significant of a cost. I mean, those of us that are appraisers in Alaska are paying $1,100 plus on our biennial certification and consider it the cost to do business. And, all of the appraisers are certainly charging comparable fees based on where their area of service is.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Derry. Thank you for your testimony. I'm going to also bring Mark Schiffman forward under invited testimony. Mr. Schiffman, you can place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your statement, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Mark Schiffman. I represent REVA, the Real Estate Valuation Advocacy Association. Thank you for your time today and consideration of House Bill 329. As been said several times, AMCs and all of my members support being regulated in Alaska and all 50 states along with the territories. A couple of items just to touch on. Mr. Derry has done a tremendous job, as has Mr. Atkinson, in laying out a lot of this, and I'm happy to take questions. But just a few points of clarity. There are now 46 states that have adopted or have passed legislation to regulate appraisal management companies. Alaska, Massachusetts, New York, and Ohio are the final four, and there is legislative activity in all four of those to make it an even 50. As you spoke in earlier, this is a mandate from Dodd-Frank, and so I humbly am asking on behalf of the AMCs to be regulated in the state of Alaska. It is a self-pay regulation. It is not a cost to the state. AMCs do not add cost to the transaction for consumers. And so it's no different today than how we are currently operating in the state of Alaska. The only change would come if Alaska didn't regulate AMCs. So currently, you know, that we are already there working, and the difference now would be the state would have a revenue generator for all of those AMCs that would choose to become regulated. And doing business in Alaska isn't necessarily the precursor. As somebody had mentioned earlier, these are all very competitive companies, so AMCs, even if they don't have current clients there, will still seek regulation so that they can be prepared to service those lenders if needed. In all, the primary role of an appraisal management company is public safety. It stems from the consumer protection out of Dodd-Frank, and to safeguard appraiser independence, AMCs are mandated to provide that role when they are working with lenders. If an AMC is not involved, the lender still has those same responsibilities. But the difference is that over the last decade, most American lenders have outsourced these appraisal services to AMCs as an efficient and effective third party to assist them. As Mr. Derry and others had stated, it's not mandated. And there are definitely lenders out there, big and small, that use their own devices. They don't use AMCs, and this won't change that. Everyone would still have their own choice. So with that, we support the House Bill 329. We support the Senate companion, and appreciate your consideration of our request to be regulated in Alaska. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Schiffman. Do we have any questions for committee? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. I don't have anybody else signed up for invited testimony. We'll open up public testimony now at 4:06 p.m. And I do not have anybody signed up for public testimony. So we will leave public testimony open and set House Bill 329 aside. Actually, unless anybody has questions for the department, we do have the department available online. And I'm seeing nodding heads, so nobody has questions for Ms. Chambers. And that brings us next to House Bill 374 on financing, on bill financing of energy improvements. And we've got Mr. Earle to come forward before the committee, staff to Representative Bull. Mr. Earle, thank you for being here. And please place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your introduction of House Bill 374.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rob Earle, staff to Representative Wohl. House Bill 374 allows a utility to voluntarily create an on-bill financing program to help customers finance energy improvements. To qualify, the improvement must utilize renewable energy or include switching to a more efficient device or fuel that does not increase greenhouse gas emissions. Under an on-bill financing program, a utility customer would borrow money for an energy improvement and then repay it through a meter conservation charge on their utility bill. A customer's utility bill, even with the addition of a meter conservation charge, would often immediately be lower due to the energy savings from the increased fuel efficiency. This legislation would be particularly useful as the Interior Energy Project expands its reach and more Fairbanks residents choose to convert from oil to natural gas to heat their homes. These can be expensive conversions, and this could be an attractive option for residents. Examples of energy improvements that would qualify under HB 374 include adding solar panels to a house, upgrading to a more efficient, energy-efficient water heater, or converting from oil to natural gas. The bill allows for utilities to create either an on-bill financing or an on-bill repayment program. The difference being that under the on-bill financing, the utility would provide the capital for the loan to the customer. And under on-bill repayment, a third-party financial institution, most likely a bank, would provide the capital. If a utility elects to create an on-bill financing program, it is the intent of HB 374 that the program be at no cost to the utility. The utility can recoup all of their costs through a line item on bills of customers who elect to utilize the program. And also, if the property is sold, the balance of the remaining loan and other costs of the agreement may be recovered by the utility from a subsequent purchaser. So we believe HB 374 provides an optional tool for utilities and their customers to lower energy costs and increase air quality in Alaska. And the legislation provides the program, the on-bill financing programs, to be voluntary at every level for the utility, for the customer, and for any landlord and tenant situations. They would both have to agree as well. That completes my introduction, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Earle. Do we have questions for Representative Sullivan Leonard?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for presenting the bill. I just have a quick question just from a consumer standpoint. So, for example, if I wanted to add a wind turbine to my house and then contract with Manusk Electric Association and maybe a lender like North Rim Bank, how would all of those transactions work?
Through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard. So, first of all, Manusk Electric Association would have to implement this program, mm-hmm. and the bill is written with broad latitude for how they could do that. But we think it's most likely that a utility would use on-bill repayment, so they would engage a bank for the capital. So the utility would offer the program, a customer would sign up, and then if the utility included wind turbines as one of the options for mm-hmm. what could be financed, there's different ways that they could secure the money from a bank. Most likely they would borrow money from a bank as a lump sum, and then the utility would just act as the pass through for the repayment mechanism. The customer, depending on how the utility set up the program, the customer would probably choose a third party to install the wind turbine.
Mm-hmm.
After the installation, there would be an additional charge on the customer's utility bill to repay the loan. It's not specified in legislation what the length of the loan would be or what the interest rate would be. That would be up to the utility to decide.
Just to follow up, Mr. Chairman. And so the whole premise is to lower your electrical cost, right? So I guess I'm trying to figure that out, because if you want to lower your utility rates, say, by 20%, 30%, mm-hmm. but now over here you're having to pay another 20%, 30% for the capital you've invested, mm-hmm. is that kind of what I'm seeing? I mean,
through the chair, Representative Sullivan Leonard, I don't know if you meant 20 or 30% interest rate, but
I just threw a number out.
So we envision probably less than 3% would be charged, because there's the extra surety of the loan being attached to the meter. So the lending institution has that extra assurance that if the loan is behind, the utility could shut off the power to the customer. But let's just say hypothetically it's a $5,000 improvement, and if it's a 10-year loan at 3%, I think that would be about $48 a month. So if that didn't immediately lower the customer's utility bill by $48, you know, once the meter conservation charge was paid off, their utility bill would almost certainly be lower, and they could recoup in the future after that.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Earle? Seeing none, thank you. And we do have invited testimony. We've got Mr. Terrio with ADA. If you can come forward, place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Gene Terrio on behalf of ADA, and specifically as the Interior Energy Project team lead. Pleased to be here to support Representative Wall's legislation, and have enjoyed working with his staff. I actually began looking at mechanisms of this type back when I was still at the Alaska Energy Authority. At that time, the Energy Authority and ADA were working together with the interior communities on the Interior Energy Project, looking to expand the availability of natural gas as a more affordable, cleaner source of fuel in the interior. And once the commodity was available, what tools could be allowed for the utilities to use to help the consumers then take advantage of the hopefully cheaper and cleaner fuel. The PACE legislation, which was actually put into place last year, was a mechanism that was allowed specifically targeting businesses. And the on-bill mechanism that is before you today has many of the same attributes as the PACE legislation. It's trying to piggyback on an existing relationship between a property owner and an entity that interacts with that property owner either on a yearly basis, which was the property tax mechanism that was part of the PACE legislation, or with the on-bill, piggyback basically on that monthly bill that comes from your electric or gas utility, and use that as a means of recapturing a loan payment, basically, and assuring that loan payment then goes back to pay back a loan that was taken out to either convert property to natural gas or install solar panels or something that's attractive to the consumer. And basically, by attaching or borrowing the strength of that relationship, you're hopefully latching on to a means that lowers the rates of default. Lower default means lower risk lending. Lower risk lending means lower interest rate that comes along with the funds. A couple of years ago, in the interior of the gas utilities, working together with the local governments, put together a working group looking at exploring these different means of incenting customers to avail themselves of financing to transfer over to natural gas. And we actually did work with the utility people. We asked them to come in, bring in their last couple of months of utility bills. We sat down with them, educated them on the mechanism, and then had them interact to a series of questions with push buttons. You may have sometime taken place in a group sort of polling or focus group where they have you answer questions and then they flash the results up on the screen. I was quite surprised that the availability of an on-bill repayment mechanism registered more favorably with the consumers than a low interest rate. I thought they would all be very much looking for either a 1% loan or, you know, a 2% loan, but the ability to finance an improvement on their property and pay for a portion of that improvement while they're still in the property, and then the remaining obligation transferred to the next owner because the next owner is going to get an ongoing benefit from the improvement, that actually registered more favorably with the consumers than a low-interest loan. That's not to say that they weren't interested in a low-interest loan, but this ability to do an improvement, have the repayment obligation attached to the meter, and transfer with the property when the property transfers was very attractive to them. A couple years back, when I was still at AEA, I did quite a bit of work with the RUS, division of the USDA federal program, to track down potential sources of federal funds that could flow through the utility at a low interest rate to the consumer to help provide these financing. And I was surprised to find out that some of the sources of money that may in fact be available specifically mentioned on-bill repayment mechanism as one of the things they would be looking for in a business plan to, again, assure that there would be low default rates associated with the lending. And if the federal program, was going to be providing low-interest money, they wanted to make sure that they were engaged in low-risk lending. And again, the on-bill mechanism and the PACE mechanism were two of the means that those entities indicated were very attractive to them. Specifically to a question that was asked previously, a lot of the arrangements here between the consumer, the utility, and a source of money, a private lender, will be put down in contracts, basically. If the bank, the local bank, is going to provide money and wants to use this means to make sure that there's a low default rate, they're going to be looking for a contractual arrangement between themselves and the utility to make sure that as that monthly repayment comes in, the utility is contractually obligated then to pass that money on to the bank to make a payment against the obligation. So, you know, on behalf of ADA and specifically the Interior Energy Project, we do believe that this is an important tool for the utilities to have access to. The legislation is written so that it is voluntary for electric utilities and natural gas utilities specifically. And in the interior, of course, the availability to the natural gas utility is a key component that we believe that will help with the Interior Energy Project. The locally created utility, the IGU in Interior Alaska, has actually had a contractor under contract looking at different programs nationwide and making a recommendation to them on which programs they think would be important. And an on-bill mechanism is one that was highlighted in a report that was recently provided to the IGU Board of Directors. The IGU, as part of that report, they had the local a local attorney look at state statutes and determine, you know, if in fact legislation was absolutely necessary. And basically our statutes are silent on the issue. And so it brings up a quandary if in fact the utility wants to work with a local lender. Is that local lender really going to bring money and lend it out if there's some statutory question of whether the program is allowed? And so basically what the legislation before you does is just clarify in Alaska law that an on-bill financing mechanism for a gas utility and a electric utility is available on a voluntary means for the utility and a voluntary means for the customer.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Terrio? Seeing no questions, thank you. Next up we have Jomo Stewart. Mr. Stewart, can you place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jomo Stewart, and I'm the General Manager of the Interior Gas Utility, and I'm calling from Fairbanks, Alaska. As is becoming more and more often the case, Mr. Earle and Mr. Terrio have done just a sterling job of describing both the need and the legislation, and so honestly, sir, I'm just here to answer questions, except to say very very much thankful to the sponsor for the legislation, and thank you to yourself and the committee for hearing it. Really appreciate it.
Okay. Mr. Stewart, next up we have Alec Mestag with AELMP. Mr. Mestag, if you come forward, place your name and affiliation on the record.
Hi, I'm Alec Mestag with Alaska Electric Light and Power Company. So thank you for giving the opportunity to provide some comments on this. As already been described, one of the this bill would provide could potentially provide a very valuable tool to consumers who are interested in financing various types of improvements, particularly among residential customers who may have limited options or opportunities to obtain financing for those, or would like more opportunity or more options for how they finance certain improvements. A couple things in addition to what have already been described as benefits for a program like this. I can envision many instances where the improvement being pursued wouldn't create an initial decline in the average monthly bill received. You know, it might decrease the energy portion of the bill, but the total bill may increase over a period of time. And I think that there's still a lot of value in that potentially because we tend to underestimate the importance of comfort in people's energy decisions. So I frequently talk with customers who on a day-to-day basis about their energy consumption and how they manage their energy in their homes. And a very defining factor of how people manage energy in their homes is how they feel in their homes. So to the extent that your home is drafty, you may keep your temperature much higher than you would otherwise. So an improvement that would, say, replace your windows may not decrease the average bill if you were to finance it through an on-bill program, but it could significantly improve your comfort which would allow you to keep the temperature lower while still feeling comfortable in your home. And those types of kind of associated benefits of an improvement, while not decreasing your monthly bill directly based on the efficiency improvement of the measure, could allow you to conserve in a new way that would more greatly benefit your bills. From the ALMP perspective on the bill as it stands, keeping it optional is very important. I think it's not a tool that we would necessarily run into, because we would have to consider how it would operate and how it would be treated from a regulatory standpoint. I have expressed some concerns over how fuel switching is defined, because again, not every type of fuel switching that requires a the fuel switching is defined in the bill now as new equipment that is more efficient. That's not necessarily always the only measure of a successful energy improvement. So if you were moving from an oil boiler to a biomass boiler, that would not actually increase your efficiency in many cases, but it could still be a beneficial measure. One thing that we were talking about today that we have some concern about at ALMP is just if there were any it may be useful to include some language that would specifically grant utilities the ability to not allow certain measures to be included in the on-bill finance program, so to grant us some discretion in which types of improvements we would seek to fund through the on-bill or repay through an on-bill program. So there are examples of certain measures in our system that could create system-wide it could be a detriment to the system overall over time if they were pursued, but they could still meet the letter of the bill as it stands. So that would be something that we'd like. We wouldn't want to be in a situation where we created the on-bill finance program, we specifically pursued certain measures with it, and then someone came to us with a measure that we would not see as a benefit to the electric system. If we said we would deny or not allow that to be part of the on-bill program, we could see someone taking a complaint to the RCA and then having the RCA rule that as a discriminatory measure, and then essentially force us into a situation of funding measures that could create problems in the system overall under that scenario. So, I mean, that may or may not actually play out, but it would be a concern of ours with the bill as it stands now.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Mr. Mestag, Representative Josephson?
Thank you, through the chair. On the last point, can you give more guidance to the sponsor of how would the sponsor know the details of what ALMP would accept as a conservation measure and what it might reject?
Through the chair, Representative, I think that it's the concern that I have is probably very system specific. So each individual electric system has unique concerns. Each individual gas system probably has similar unique concerns. So I'd say that it would likely need to be a relatively general allowance for utilities to kind of have some discretion over what types of measures could be funded through the repayment program.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Mestag. I don't have anybody else signed up for or identified for invited testimony, but at 4:28 p.m. we will open up public testimony. I would like the committee to know that we also have members of the RCA available online for questions. At this point, I'd like to bring Mr. Stuart Cohen forward. Sorry about earlier, Stuart. Go ahead and place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
I'm Stuart Cohen, and I'm representing Interfaith Power and Light. And one of the tasks that we've undertaken is to try to implement a program that replaces inefficient oil and electric heating systems with air source heat pumps. A heat pump is like an air conditioner, but it can either heat or cool just by flipping a switch. It's 2 to 3 times more efficient than our present heating systems, and they're so efficient that they reduce a heating bill by 40 to 70%. They generate enough savings to pay for themselves in about 5 years, and they can pay for themselves out of the energy that they save. It's a technology that's ideal for the temperature range of Southeast Alaska, the South Central Coast, and the Aleutians. And it costs in Juneau, a simple installation costs about $4,100 to install for a simple dwelling of about 1,500 square feet or less. I was recently in China. In China, they're extremely widely used, not because they are green, but because they are cheap. They're on apartment buildings, huge buildings, old buildings, new buildings, one-room buildings. They're everywhere. So one of the things that we did is we put together a team to model the potential impact of heat pumps on Juneau's economy. We modeled 8,901 residential structures out of Juneau's total private building stock of 10,236 buildings. Our model was based on conversations with local heating contractors, homeowners, and also with people from Efficiency Maine, which is a state of Maine organization that helps its citizens save money through energy efficiency. What we found was that if Juneau were to convert all 8,901 homes, mobile homes, and condos that were in our model, the energy savings would amount to nearly $10 million a year. And that would be money that's retained in our economy. If we add in apartments and commercial and government buildings, I imagine that the annual savings to Juneau's economy would be somewhere between $20 and $30 million. That's a lot of money. The same model would apply to Sitka and Ketchikan. Sitka has a highly underutilized hydro facility. We've been in touch with people there, and they're very interested in this bill because they would like to use up more of their electric generation. And also, since Juneau is hydro-powered, it also zeroes out a huge part of our carbon footprint. And one of the things that was made clear by the people at Efficiency Maine was that a good, easy, quick financing system is critical, and that's exactly what this bill does. If you have low income, it could be hard to come up with $4,000 in savings for a heat pump. Likewise, if you're a church or your business, or you'd like to get a heat pump but you're not sure how long you'll be living in your house, it can be hard to commit to that kind of investment even though you know that it's good in the long run. This really well thought out, excellent bill addresses that. By enabling third party financing and by putting it on the utility bill and making it transferable, it reduces the risk for both the borrower and the lender. It's flexible enough to help people all over the state of Alaska. This is the kind of bill that everybody in this committee can go home to your constituents and say, we're doing exactly what government's supposed to do. It's smart, it costs nothing, it compels nothing or anyone, it constricts nothing. It just enables Alaskans to make practical money-saving improvements of their choice to their home, their business, or their church. So please pass this very, very thoughtful, beneficial, excellent bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cohen. Any questions? Thank you for your testimony.
Thanks.
Next up, we have Seal Smith from Eagle River. Ms. Smith, can you provide us with your name and affiliation and your testimony, please?
Yes, thank you very much for taking public testimony on this.
Ms. Smith, we are having some difficulty hearing you.
Can using chat.
Ms. Smith, excuse me.
As in Larry.
Excuse me. We're having some difficulty hearing you. Can you speak directly in?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you better now. Thank you.
Okay. Yes, and I'm calling in today for the Alaska Climate Action Network. We have partner groups all around the state. And I'm calling
Ms. Smith, we're still having some difficulty hearing you. Can you speak directly into the speaker of your telephone, please?
Can you hear me now?
No, that's still not coming through very clearly.
How is that?
That's much better.
Oh, okay. Sorry. For some reason, my phone thought it was on speaker. So I'm calling in for the Alaska Climate Action Network. And we are an organization of organizations. We have partner groups around the state. And so we enthusiastically support this bill. On-bill financing has been well proven throughout the country as a means of extending financing to a much larger range of people than we see with the PACE bills and similar kinds of upfront financing programs. So we're very happy to see this and support it and really hope that it gets passed as soon as possible. The one concern we do have is it's not the language in the bill at this point is not clear in terms of weatherization. And so when people, for example, want to put in a heat pump or put solar panels on their roof, the first thing they would want to do is improve the efficiency of their homes. And so there are a lot of small weatherization type improvements that would be good to happen up front from installing some of these more expensive heat pumps and other technologies. So we'd like to see weatherization included in the bill as an amendment, just so that it's very clear that those measures can also be covered with the on-bill financing.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Smith. Do we have any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. Next up, we have Corey Borgson with Golden Valley Electric. Mr. Borgson, can you place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please? Mr. Borgson? Okay.
Thank you. I need to turn off my mute button.
There you go. Thank you.
Place Chairman, are you there?
Yes, we are. Place your name and affiliation on the record and provide us with your testimony, please.
Thank you. My name is Corey Borgeson. I'm from Fairbanks, Alaska. I'm CEO of Golden Valley Electric Association. A few things about Golden Valley. We have 44,000 meters, and we serve members all the way from the Cantwell area, a little bit past Delta Junction. We're a not-for-profit electric utility. And we're pleased to be able to tell you that we support this on-bill financing effort that the Representative Wohl has gone forward. We think it could be an important tool to put in the toolkit, and we urge the passage of this bill. We think that it's fairly broad in what can be utilized for this financing, and we think that's an appropriate way to go forward with this. I can't tell you now, I'm not certain that Golden Valley would jump into this, but as Mr. Terrio mentioned, we are an RUS borrower, and there are many programs out there under the Rural Utility Services that would provide financing for us to pass through to our members to move into renewable energy conservation products and the like. So we think there are opportunities out there now, and there will be future opportunities as well.
Thank you, Mr. Borgeson. Do we have any questions? Seeing no questions, thank you for your testimony. At this point, I don't have anybody else signed up. Is there anybody else in the room that would like to testify on House Bill? Let's see where we're at, 374. Seeing none, we will leave public testimony open until our next hearing. We do not have any other business coming before the committee at this time, and we will cancel Saturday's meeting. Our next meeting will be at Monday, March 19th at 3:15 p.m. We will have Senate Bill 4, Barbers, Hairdressers, Chemical, and Braiding, first hearing on that bill, and we'll have our second hearing on House Bill 403, Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association, and we'll have our first hearing on House Bill 379, Commercial Fisherman's Fund, Vessel Owner Claims, and second hearing on House Bill 401, Insurance, Reinsurance Valuation Credits. We heard those both, 401 and 403, on Wednesday. Without any further business to come before House Labor and Commerce, we will stand adjourned at 4:38 p.m. Thank you.